You can meet and hear Anthony Esselin, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Rosebro at the 2018 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Well, just as we come on the air, there's a story from CNN about the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops. They are shamefaced, I think you could say. I think Cardinal Dolan is quoted in another related story saying his mother is ashamed to be Catholic. It seems as though, slowly but surely, maybe, the inertia of the Roman Catholic hierarchy might be overcome on the issue of the priestly sexual abuse scandal. But there's still voices outside the U.S. and inside the U.S. that still don't seem to get it. We're going to be talking about the various reactions from the Roman Catholic hierarchy on the priestly sexual abuse scandal. Terry Mattingly joins us. He's Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So has anything changed?
Well, a lot has been said. A lot of actions have kind of been taken concerning various things that are connected to this issue. Like this fall, there is supposed to be a massive conference of bishops and others focusing on young people. I read a letter this morning from a number of priests who essentially were asking that the agenda for that conference needs to be considerably more Catholic and not just focus on the voices of young Catholics who want to see church doctrine changed, modernized on all of the predictable issues. And then you've had other statements that indicate kind of a what I'm beginning to think of as a basic structure to the current crisis. And your introduction focusing on reactions of the hierarchy kind of points to one of the biggest questions in this entire crisis. And that is, what you and I have been asking. What is the crisis about? And there are a lot of people who think that at this point, the actual crisis is about the bishops, whereas the bishops tend to think the system is okay, they just need to further improve church policies and covenants on the abuse of children. Now, that ought to sound familiar to you. We've talked a lot in recent weeks about the fact that you can argue that this is a story about pedophilia. I was reading a piece just the other day in USA Today that literally opened in its lead by stating that this was a pedophilia crisis. Yet anybody who reads any of the statistics related to this and knows the definition of the word pedophilia knows that statistically this is not a crisis about pedophilia. We've talked about this before. That gets us then to the second level, which you could call the priesthood level, and that's where the statistics actually are, which is kind of a crisis in the priesthood because specifically cases of priests grooming young boys right as they enter the teen years. And you cross that line from pedophilia to ephebophilia between prepubescent children and postpubescent children. The number of these cases that involved priests grooming boys exactly at that moment so that they then have them as sexual partners in their young and middle teenage years, that's where all the statistics are. And then that gets us back to, we've been wording this different ways, the third level, which is the bishops, the system, the seminaries, how you get promoted. And most of all, now the big hot issue is who in the system at the level of cardinals protected ex-cardinal Theodore McCarrick, who promoted him, and who depended on him to get their promotions. So the kind of the Vatican corporate ladder is the third issue, and there are lots of indications that that's the system that has had trouble trying to bring justice to the bishops, archbishops, and cardinals who have hidden all of the different kinds of abuse: child abuse, teen abuse, seminarian abuse, and priests who are simply abusing their vows through sexual activity with adults. So there's another summary. You and I, it seems like every other week, we're talking about trying to sum this up so that listeners understand it. But I think right now, the cutting edge of the debate is, do the bishops realize the degree to which the public is angry about what they have done or not done?
So here is the story I referenced just a moment ago from CNN, and it came up just as we were within moments of beginning our conversation here, Terry. So I don't want to catch you at a disadvantage, but I'll read a bit of it to you from CNN. The U.S. Catholic Bishops Conference issued a dramatic apology on Wednesday for the role of bishops in the church's clergy sexual abuse scandal and announced new initiatives to hold abusive or negligent bishops accountable. Here's some quotes. "Some bishops, by their actions or their failures to act, have caused great harm to both individuals and the church as a whole. They have used their power and authority to manipulate and sexually abuse others. They have allowed fear of scandal to replace genuine concern and care for those who have been victimized by abusers." Now, is that, where does that fall in the categories? Is this, the system is okay, it's just a few bad apples? Where does, do you think that falls there?
Well, I mean, I'm reading this right now. Of course, some of these bishops have just returned from Rome. I'm looking to see if they are doing this with papal authority. I think it's very important whether or not you see this now applied to some things related to the McCarrick case. However, I've now hit the point in the CNN story where it says, notably, the bishop's statement makes no mention of the possibility of a Vatican-led investigation into McCarrick, which DiNardo had said he would seek from Pope Francis. A Vatican spokesman has not responded to requests for information from CNN. So I would argue that at this point, that's a positive move that the bishops want to do that, but it doesn't have much to do with the McCarrick case, it would appear at this point. And it looks like it will leave the crucial figures in the McCarrick accusations right where they're sitting.
Why is the McCarrick issue so central in your mind?
Well, he's just a textbook case of someone who, it's apparently, and this gets us back to this issue we discussed earlier. The church was willing to let the McCarrick case remain secret until the New York Archdiocese came forward with the fact that there had been accusations that he had abused children. At that point, all of a sudden, it turned out there were church settlements. These were settlements, paid off victims before he became a cardinal, which raises the issue again, how did this man become a cardinal? And then that returns us to the issue, what about all the people that tried in documents and in personal visits to go to Rome and plead that McCarrick would not be made a cardinal, let alone the cardinal of a city as central to Catholic and American life as Washington, D.C., if there had been decades of reports, whispers, and rumors that he was taking seminarians to this beach house and sexually harassing them and in some cases abusing them? How did that happen? So that's why the McCarrick issue is important, because he is a one-man bridge between all the different levels of this scandal. And yet it seemed that even though They had already settled cases involving children. And even though people had taken letters of complaint and direct appeals to Rome, he still is named a cardinal of the Roman Catholic Church and handed Washington, D.C. Do you see why he's so important? And then you look at who are his protégés, and several of his protégés through his career are now among the fastest rising cardinals in the Roman Catholic Church on issues related to the agency on family life and marriage, and then what used to be the largest archdiocese in America, and the Archdiocese of Newark, which is frequently a launching pad to huge dioceses like New York and whatever. You have another person with some links in terms of reports of abuse and stuff being made to this guy complaining. You have the Bishop of San Diego potentially becoming the next Bishop of Washington, and it goes on and on. Have you seen the movie Spotlight?
I have not.
Okay. In that movie, there's an incredible moment where they say, look, we got the story. We've proven that the following priests have abused children. And the publisher of the Boston Globe says, yes, we can publish a few more names, and we'll be right back where we were in earlier cases with the church denying this, or the church saying, we'll take care of one or two or three bad apples. We want to profile the system. So the issue here is, does Rome realize the degree to which Catholics, at least in America, are angry about the system? Meanwhile, you have outbreaks of these massive government investigations and other documents and stuff. You have them in South America, you have them in Germany, and you have every indication that more states are now going to take literally the law into the hands of their policing agencies and begin investigating the church themselves, which predicts more headlines in the future. Once again, is the story about child abuse something that can be tweaked with a few adjustments? Or is this a story about a broken ecclesiastical episcopal system? This includes the system in which people are educated in the seminaries, are promoted into big parishes, promotes them to become bishops, promotes them to become cardinals, at which point they help keep the secrets of all the people they're connected to. Which is it? The press seems at this point to still be focusing on the child abuse situation, and I can certainly understand that. That's a horrible situation. Nobody wants to see that continue. But we're actually at a point in this story where it's safer for Catholic officials to talk about child abuse, where they have made major progress in the years since 2002. Most of the cases we heard about in Pennsylvania all occurred before the child abuse reform reporting systems that went into place, you know, a decade or so ago. The church is frankly doing a better job of this than many secular institutions related to athletics, medicine, public school, etc. A child is probably safer today in a Roman Catholic parish than in a lot of public school systems in America when it comes to having some sense of a system to produce justice in terms of any complaints they would make. So the child abuse issue, it's not that it's settled. Progress has been made there. The issue is, at what point will the Vatican talk about the problems involving the bishops, archbishops, and cardinals?
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about various reactions from the Roman Catholic hierarchy on the priestly sexual abuse scandal. And when we come back, we'll talk about what the Pope had to say in a sermon on September 11th about it. Stay tuned.
the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, hear us, send us in your word. Help us who might deceive us.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Based upon human dignity, the nature of a human person, that we protect certain human rights.
Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues, Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And then amongst these human rights, the very first one is going to be the right to life. Then the right to liberty, especially religious liberty, and then how freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly and association, how these things actually hang together or they fall together. That a society that doesn't respect the free exercise of religion also will tend not to respect freedom of speech or freedom of press or the right to life or rights of private property, that these civil liberties tend to hang together.
You can meet and hear Ryan Anderson making the case for our first freedoms at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about various reactions from the Roman Catholic hierarchy to the priestly sexual abuse scandal with Terry Mattingly, Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's also founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, can you explain or at least kind of give us a proper framework for understanding what the Pope had to say in a sermon on September 11th? You recently quoted him saying, "In these times, it seems like the great accuser has been unchained and is attacking bishops. True, we are all sinners, we bishops. He tries to uncover the sins so that they are visible in order to scandalize the people. A bishop's strength against the great accuser is prayer. Let us pray today for our bishops, for me, and for those here, and for all the bishops throughout the world." That's obviously not a statement made just out of the blue by Pope Francis. What do you make of it?
Well, I mean, we continue to read in the press that the Pope hasn't responded to the Archbishop Vigano testimony about McCarrick and about the accusations that Pope Francis helped kind of bring McCarrick back from the ecclesiastical dead in terms of, you know, bringing him back into a prominent role of leadership in the church, at least behind the scenes, and in the system of promoting archbishops and cardinals, etc. So here's the question. When you hear that quote, the great accuser, Satan is out there attacking our bishops. Now, right now, who is attacking the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church? The upper hierarchy, including Pope Francis. Well, let's see. Archbishop Vigano would certainly be at the top of that list. State governments that are attempting to do summary reports and grand juries on the abuses of the Catholic hierarchy, they would come to mind. The media would come to mind, that any media that dare ask questions right now, and many of them may be working behind the scene, but we're not seeing reactions yet in terms of a lot of work. Ironically, I've written a post or two about the fact that some of the most important research on McCarrick has been published on the editorial pages or the op-ed pages of the Washington Post, not in the news section, which is really intriguing. normally you look for hard news in the hard news pages. So who do you think the Pope is shooting at with those words? And how long is the press going to say that the Pope has not responded? This is at least the second, if not the third, set of remarks the Pope has made in which he talks about Satan attacking the church right now in the form of critics who just want to cause trouble, who just want to hurt bishops, who just want to do X, Y, Z. And in many ways, even though it's a calmer statement, an even more important statement was made by Cardinal Andres Maradiaga of Honduras, who is the leader of the inner ring, to use a C.S. Lewis term, the inner ring of nine cardinals who advise the Pope. Now, basically, there's nobody above these nine guys. And the head of that circle is someone who has been accused of covering up sex crimes against seminarians and others in his own country. So the Cardinal Maradiaga the other day, in an interview with a Spanish language publication called Religion Digital, listen carefully to this quote. "It does not seem correct to me to transform something that is of the private order into bombshell headlines exploding all over the world and whose shrapnel is hurting the faith of many. I think this case of an administrative nature should not have been made public in accordance with more serene and objective criteria, not with the negative charge of deeply bitter expressions."
What does that mean?
Well, what he's talking about, I guess, is Archbishop Vigano. I've heard his name pronounced two different ways as well. This seems to be a shot at him. So what is he saying about the McCarrick scandal, the seminary scandal, and this systemic scandal of covering up these crimes? He calls it, first of all, something is of the private order. In other words, this should have all been handled in private, not out in the open with headlines and stuff. He then calls it a case of an administrative nature. In other words, look, we're doing what we want to do with McCarrick behind the scenes. Leave us alone. Doesn't that sound, once again, like the very system of private, secret handling of scandal at the top levels of the church that everybody is mad about, if you accept that viewpoint of the scandal? It's such a calm, low-key statement. But when you look at it, it's really quite amazing to transform something that is of the private order, the McCarrick scandal, into bombshell headlines. I think this is a case of an administrative nature. To add insult to injury for a lot of people who are concerned about this, he then says that the notion of a gay lobby at the Vatican is out of proportion. It's something that exists more in the ink of the newspapers than in reality, which is exactly what critics of the Vatican would say the Vatican thinks about this right now. You could make a case that part of what's happening here is that Europeans and European institutions simply think that the private lives of powerful leaders are and should be more private and should be private order and administrative nature issues, not something to where the names of cardinals can be pulled into the headlines because they're connected to child abuse, the abuse of teenagers, and the abuse of seminarians, and some interesting romantic affairs. You could say this is a Europe versus America thing, and I know a lot of people who think that.
Okay, a couple questions here. The system you've mentioned here is, let's just say for the sake of argument, the system is broken. There are two problems that seem to present themselves there, and that would be you obviously cannot have people from within the system investigating the system.
Right.
They are the system. I mean, that's simply,
I mean, the people at the top of the system.
People
in
is,
a lot of these accusations.
Well, people is policy kind of is a way of talking about what the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church ends up being. It's a Byzantine, not to mix East and West, but it's a Byzantine labyrinthine system. And I don't know that there's a state attorney general or a reporter, as good as they may be, who could possibly hope to understand or much less navigate that system. That's a huge hurdle.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, if you were looking for some sort of definitive answer on the McCarrick case, Archbishop Vigano has already pointed toward the fact that the documents that would address this are in the hands of the Vatican. Now, the Vatican still doesn't know how many copies of those documents he might have. We've talked about that before. That's a trump card that's out there big time on this whole situation. Remind me exactly the point of your question again.
Well, I'm a reporter, and I want to say I'm going to look into
right.
the system. That is about as complicated of a bureaucracy as you're going to find post-Soviet Union.
Yeah, and it's also a bureaucracy over which you have zero control in terms of getting it to say anything. Are we going to end up with a showdown between attorneys general in America of different states and the Vatican? I mean, you can't subpoena the Vatican. It would be interesting to see if you could subpoena documents that are at the Papal Nuncio's office in Washington, except that is technically the headquarters of an independent state.
A foreign power.
Vatican City, a foreign power, which means you have no power over diplomatic immunity, and all that comes into play. So how do you go about this? Once again, you're looking for people who are brave enough to speak on the record about these basic facts. There's another voice that spoke out on this that I want to make sure that we get to before I sign off. That speech by the Pope, the Satan is attacking the bishop speech, came on September 11. On that very same day, elsewhere in Rome, there was a forum that was held to discuss the release of the Italian language edition of the controversial book, The Benedict Option, by one Rod Dreher. And Rod was present for this with a good translator working his way through it. And one of the presentations was made by a name that doesn't leap easily to the tongue and isn't known much in America, a German heritage archbishop named Georg Ganswein, Ganswein, for all of you out there that can pronounce German better than I can. In his presentation, he said, the church needs to realize that it's dealing with a combination of crises that he directly called a spiritual 9/11 for the Catholic Church, both in America and around the world. Now, you think, well, okay, this is an archbishop saying that, but who is this archbishop becomes the issue. Well, he's a very symbolic figure because he holds two roles right now in the highest levels of Vatican life. First of all, he is the personal secretary of retired Pope Benedict XVI, the man who has more to do with Benedict, his life, and his thought than anyone else. So here, not only do you have a virtual endorsement of Rod's controversial book by this figure linked to retired Pope Benedict, you have him saying the church isn't taking this seriously enough. This is a spiritual 9/11. We don't have churches that have been knocked down at this point, but this is how serious this is. At the same time, this man is also the prefect of the papal household, which means he's one of the people who stands in the office of Pope Francis and helps decide who gets to see him in ceremonial visits, who gets formal audiences, etc. So we have one of the gatekeepers of Francis, who also happens to be the personal friend and secretary of retired Pope Benedict, saying, we're talking about a spiritual 9/11. And in his presentation about Rod's book, he said, Benedict tried over and over and over to warn our church and to warn the bishops that something big was coming. And he read a quote from Cardinal Ratzinger of Germany, who became, of course, Pope Benedict and was the right-hand man of Saint Pope John Paul II. Ratzinger, in a Good Friday, you can't get more symbolic than Good Friday, Ratzinger says how much filth there is in the church, and even among those who in the priesthood ought to belong entirely to him, how much pride, how much self-complacency. Moving a bit down a bit, his betrayal by his disciples, their unworthy reception of his body and blood, is certainly the greatest suffering endured by the Redeemer. It pierces his heart. We can only call to him from the depths of our hearts, Kyrie eleison, Lord, save us. That's a very famous quote from Benedict, and it becomes more and more prophetic. Gonswein also mentions that during his meeting with the American bishops about the clergy abuse conference, Benedict, when he was pope, specifically said, Bishops, this is up to you. This is your territory. This is what you've got to fix. This is ultimately about you as shepherds. Powerful stuff.
Terry Mattingly is Senior Fellow for Media and Religion at the King's College in New York City. He is author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much.
Glad to be here.
On the other side of the break, in Hour 2 of Issues, Etc., it'll be part 2 of our series on catechesis. We'll talk about Jesus, the catechist. Pastor Peter Bender will be our guest.
Smartest listeners in radio, you're listening to Issues Etc.